Well, no news this week then, so a bit stuck.
Does anyone want to ask any questions before we get going? No? No funny questions?
Right.
When are you going to start?
No, it wasn't very funny, was it?
No. When you leave. So, no, literally. Go on. We're not starting. Can I have the agreement with the cast? We're not starting until that man leaves. Pat, can you show him out? Just get up, and outside those doors, there's a little vestibule you can just stand in.
Good.
Start!
I fight on, I fight to win.
Picture this. A retirement home in Dulwich, somewhere far, far away.
You buggers!
Say, kids, what time is it?
It's time for...
The Mary Whitehouse Experience! Margaret Thatcher has resigned. Ha 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 ha. Ha 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 ha.
Now, the Mary Whitehouse Experience has acquired an exclusive recording of the scene at 10 Downing Street on Wednesday morning as Mrs. Thatcher arrived back from Paris to meet her speechwriters.
Right, here we are, Margaret. Well, you'll like this. Okay, you're famous for your firm, inflexible, no U-turn approach, so this is what we've got. I shall go forward into the second ballot. I fight on, I fight to win. I resign.
Reaction from around the world has been swift. Mikhail Gorbachev. Her problem was that she was popular abroad, but unpopular at home. Whoops.
Jacques Delors.
Well, here in France, everybody is very upset.
Saddam Hussein.
Hello, everybody in Britain. I would like to extend my sympathy at this time to Janet Brown and Steve Nallon. But of course, Mike Yoward never did her. Always it was Janet Brown.
Now, the thing about something like the Thatcher resignation is that the people who are celebrating most are the news people. Papers and TV love occasions like this because it gives them something to do. Our political correspondent.
The question everyone here is asking is whether up to now this leadership ballot has been a feast of non-news and waffling punditry. However, several MPs are unwilling to commit themselves on the punditry question, so it really is a wait-and-see scenario. Have I filled enough time yet? By the way, do you like my new coat?
Now, in fact, ITN got the result of the first ballot on the screen before the BBC did because John Cull was busy talking. Which brings us to the question, where does John Cull get all his confidential information? Why are all these MPs so willing to tell him things? Why doesn't he ever come on and say...
Well, Peter, several MPs came up to me earlier in the corridor and said, "Oh no, not you, you stupid Mick. I'm not telling you anything. The last time you went straight and blabbed about it on Newsnight." It's a nice coat, isn't it?
Now, one phrase that has jumped into the forefront this week is men in grey suits. The media have leapt onto this, and all week we've been hearing about Mrs. Thatcher being visited by the men in grey suits. But what does it mean? Who are these men in grey suits? Does this mean that Mrs. Thatcher was advised to resign by Smokey Robinson and the Miracles?
So what about the challenges for the lead? Firstly, Douglas Hurd. If Mrs. Thatcher has been the greatest peacetime Prime Minister, Douglas Hurd would be, without doubt, the ugliest.
What I would do firstly if I was Prime Minister is to promise to wear a bag on my head. I'm not an animal.
But nonetheless... Douglas Hurd did really come into his own making emotive speeches in the Gulf.
One needs no further warning of the horrific consequences of chemical warfare than my face. I told Margaret to watch out the pessary.
But the real problem, surely, is for Ben Elton.
So, can you believe what Mrs. Thatch has been doing lately? I mean, just yesterday she was, and I kid you not, she was burning some compost in her back garden. Yes, indeed. Well, yeah, and it was a smokeless zone. She could have used some charcoal briquettes. I mean, yeah, yes, it would have taken much less time. As it was, Jesus, this is desperate.
The joy felt by the media when you get a week like this is almost tangible, although the emphasis within news coverage tends to vary according to what you've tuned into.
Hi, and this lunchtime on the Newsbeat. Margaret Thatcher resigns, world leaders discuss a new era in economic cooperation, Iraq sends a further 250,000 troops to the Saudi border. But first, two young guys from Bedfordshire hope to hit the top with their first single.
Well, Peter, several MPs came up to me in the corridor and said they thought the chorus was catchy enough to be a potential Christmas number one. This coat was quite expensive, you know.
The Merry White House Experience.
I'm enjoying this.
Wow! This week sees another Children in Need telethon. We would be very happy to join in with Children in Need if it wasn't for the fact that it is undermined ideologically by one simple problem. Each year, they give a lot of money to children. And what are they going to spend it on?
Well, now, last year, we raised £120,000 for 11-year-old Stuart here. And I'm very proud to announce that, as a result of all your efforts, Stuart now has 70,000 packs of pornographic playing cards.
But luckily, Children in Need do always show films updating what's happened to your money. Sue Cook.
Hello, you'll remember that last year Children in Need brought Lee Wright of Hemel Hempstead a badly needed dialysis machine. So, a year on, what difference has it made to the Wright family?
Well, I mean, it's been marvellous. In the last year we've been able to eat out a lot more, go to the theatre and the cinema, and this summer we were even able to have a 2-week holiday in Spain.
And all this was brought about by the dialysis machine?
Oh yes, that's right, yeah. I got 700 quid for it. Bernard Cribbin's signature, you know, bumped it up 50 quid or so.
But it's no doubt that money can help. A few £100,000 can write some remarkable success stories.
To me! On my head!
This is Richard Rose, playing football just like any other 13-year-old boy. And yet only last year, Richard was paralysed from the neck down and confined to a wheelchair. Or so his dad told us.
Yeah, Children in Need have a very idealised vision of childhood, especially deprived children. Like, but as everyone remembers from school, it was always the deprived children who were the nastiest and least deserving of charity. But Children in Need know they couldn't tell this truth in their promotional films and hope to get any money.
Because of his difficulties at home, Barry McNicholas of Hitchin School has to spend every break time slamming a Pakistani's face into the tarmac. At the weekends, he likes to hire out his sobbing 5-year-old sister to passing truck drivers. Remember, though, just £5,000 is all Barry needs to buy a gun. And then it's goodbye Hitchin. As part of this year's Children in Need, children were themselves asked to nominate any of their school friends who they felt deserving of help. And, for example, at Paddington Comprehensive, the third form nominated their friend Stuart Hindle, who their letter said has been since birth a spastic. When Sue Cook met him, however, Stuart turned out simply to have packed lunches, a brace, and be not very good at football. She gave him the £50,000 anyway. Now, last year, Children in Need didn't raise as much money as the year before, so what we're going to do now is stage our own telethon to help them out. What we want you to do is create more interest and therefore more money for Children in Need by being unpleasant to children.
Hello, Dave. Calls already coming in. It looks like Ivy and Joe Jarvis of Manchester have raised a lot of money on the promise that tonight, the night of their daughter's 7th birthday, the two of them are going to go down the pub.
Oh, right, great. Yeah, and another call's just come through from Mrs. Alderman of Cheshire, who says she'll give us £15 if we read out on the radio her real feelings about that clay pot her 9-year-old nephew Michael spent 3 weeks making for her at school. So, Michael, your aunt thought it was crap.
Here's a good one. Yeah, Mr. and Mrs. Baldwin will give us £20 to reveal what their son Jason is getting for Christmas.
Great!
Well, we're looking for a lot more money than that before we do it, but we will say one thing, Jason. It isn't what you wanted.
Now, Joanna Kay of Milton Keynes, your parents have written in to tell us that you've always been a big fan of Philip Schofield. Well, waiting in our Shepton Mallet studios is Philip Schofield. Hello, Philip.
Piss off, Joanna.
Thank you, Philip.
Picture this.
What's the difference between a wild animal which resembles a buffalo and was widely hunted in the early part of this century, running amok amongst your bathroom linen, and having an ex-heavyweight champion boxer of the world up your bottom? The difference, of course, is that one is having bison in your towels.
Now, it's a punchline experience, and before the show, the studio audience were asked to come up with a punchline to the following joke. What did the Queen say to Mrs. Thatcher when the Prime Minister handed in her resignation? And we've got the Queen with us, actually, to read out the answers. The first one...
What did the Queen say to Mrs. Thatcher when the Prime Minister handed in her resignation? Your Majesty, are you sure?
No, one more here.
Coming down the job, club? That's from Sir Geoffrey Howe, by the way. That's from...
Right, well, what about this one?
What? Oh, sorry. Sorry. What did the Queen say to Mrs. Thatcher when the Prime Minister handed in her resignation? Can Edward have the job?
I've got one more, which is, what did the Queen say to Mrs. Thatcher when the Prime Minister handed in her resignation? Here is your P45. I've had it written up 11 years ago by the... I'd like to award the prize for this, but the name is from Steve Bell, I think is the man who writes those chronically, cancerously unfunny cartoons in The Guardian. So, is it you who writes the cartoons in The Guardian? Thank goodness, actually, it's a bit hard. He would have kicked my head in. All right, well, Steve wins. Well done.
Big round for Steve Bell.
Right, just as a little addendum to that, we're just going to read a few letters that we've had in this week. If you remember, last week we asked listeners to write in with their suggestions for who they would like to see leading the Conservative Party. And Stuart Jackson from Preston in Lancashire has written in to say, the Tory party leader should be the green dinosaur that sat on the desk in front of Noel Edmonds on Saturday Swap Shop. It's multicoloured Swap Shop, for God's sake. Saturday Superstore. Get it right.
There's also a dress that's the Mary Shitehouse experience. Deal with that. I've got a letter from... David R.H. Buxton of Manchester, who writes, I think the leader of the Conservative Party should be Elvis Presley, because he's dead. Fair enough. A guy called John Pettigrew says, who should be Prime Minister? Easy. Colin Baker should be the new Prime Minister, because I and many others feel that he was treated disgracefully by the BBC when they fired him from Doctor Who. He was a good doctor, but he wasn't given a chance. Being leader of Britain may, in some small way, make up for this. And now, part two of the music experience. Later on, we'll be looking at the subtle and brilliant marketing strategy that's been used by record shops to popularise the compact disc. They don't stock anything else. But we start with that perennial, agonising problem, making up a party tape. It starts days before the party, as you go through your record collection, looking for suitable tracks.
This one. Oh, no, it's a bit naff. What about this? Oh, no, it's really out of date. It was good at the time. What about this one? Oh, no, people might think I'm just trying to be trendy. Oh, hang on, this is good. This is good. Oh, no, you can't dance to it. Oh, no, I'm nearly at the back of the box now. There's only the really embarrassing albums and the crappy flexi disc that fell out of the NME left. Oh, hang on, this is the one. This is the one. Never fails. Oh, I don't know, though. Maybe it's only me who likes the Wurzels.
Finding the right records, of course, isn't as bad as actually making up the party tape itself.
That's that one done. Oh, bloody hell, I left the pause button down. Okay, right, rewind. Which is it? Right, I'll miss the start. I'll miss the bloody start.
The end result, of course, is that most party tapes end up sounding like this.
Silver lining, everywhere you go now, baby, I see yours. And it's high. Oh, sorry, I got it a bit wrong. I went over it again and, sorry, stops a minute. Keep dancing. There's some more sausage rolls in the kitchen. Here's a... Oh, sorry, I've got the level a bit wrong. I've got the recording level a bit wrong. Sorry.
The young Gary Davis there. Sometimes real cheapskates make up a party tape by recording the songs off the radio, but of course these are very easy to spot.
And a classic hit.
Now, people fall into two categories, people who know about music and people who don't. People who know about music are, of course, the dullest people in the world. They're known as musos, and they're easily identified. ordinary people say,
I like the twangy guitar.
Musos say,
yeah, classic telecaster sound, right? Bridge picker, wired Dimarzio humbuckers, probably chorus through a rock box with each stereo channel panned to a different track. Yeah.
Ordinary people say,
this bloke can't sing a bleeding note.
Musos say,
yeah, interesting atonal vocal track.
Yeah. Musos are the people who, when you go to a gig, they're the ones who stand right at the front so they can look at the amplifiers. At the end of the show, when everyone else is saying,
it's good, wasn't it? I really like their songs.
The musos are saying,
yeah, did you notice he was using a Fender Strat with no tremolo arm through a PV150 with rotosound round-wound 009 gauges? And did you notice he played a minor 9th, 3rd, 13th? Well, on the album, he plays a minor 7th, 3rd, 9th. I mean, because he's all technique. He's got no feel. I mean, anyone could trigger a fairlight off a hi-hat. I mean, I'm just as good as him. I'm just as good as him, except that I'm a sad, talentless, bitter sixth former. I mean, I'm just as good as him. Can we have the Marillion tape on in the car?
Now, lots of people try at some stage of their life to learn a musical instrument. This is usually a massively depressing experience, as your expectations are far too high. When parents start their children learning the recorder, they're anticipating hearing this.
Whereas, in fact, they get this. Yeah, all right, all right. Now, even worse than this is the piano. If you walk into a room that has a piano in it, someone will go straight over to it and start going... And then, to make it worse, someone else starts going... And thanks to the Pet Shop Boys for that demonstration.
Nothing funny happened on the way down here tonight. My girlfriend hasn't left me. I've seen no amusing adverts, and my childhood was all right. Trying to raise a laugh or two is how we make our money. But this week no famous people died. Well, only Malcolm Muggeridge, so no one really funny. There are several stock scenarios that always raise a cheer, but there hasn't been a single decent air crash since last year. Nowhere's had an earthquake, and worst of all, not Wales. So we're left with the comic's last resort, that one and only gag that never fails. Get your knob out, get your knob out. Get your knob out, get your knob out. If the gig's a little iffy, you can wow them with your stiffy. Get it out. Get your knob out, get your knob out. If the gig is going bad, just simply treat them to your tadger. No need to be downhearted. Hey, it's how Ben Elton started. Get it out, get your knob out. Get it out. Anybody know any good jokes? No, I don't think so. Well, get your knob out. Okay, what about Thatcher and the Conservatives? Lots of comedy there, but it's been done. Okay, get your knob out. What about Saddam Hussein? He's really funny, isn't he? Yes? No. Okay, get your knob out. Okay, come on, we all want to hear now. Here we go. Get it out. Get your knob out. Get your knob out.
Get it out.
Get your knob out. Get your knob out. The comedian's first rule is... Grab them with your ghoulies, get it out.
Get your knob out, get your knob out.
Don't worry that you're shy, I know it might seem reckless. You're bound to get a laugh, and it's sodding shuts up hecklers. Alright, so you can just shut the fuck up.
Get it out, get your knob out.
One more time, get it out. Take it down now. Let there be no doubt.
Well, get your knob out,
get your knob out. Everybody shout.
Well, get your knob out, get your knob out.
Wave it all about.
Well, get your knob out,
get your knob out. Because you'll never be a failure.
Ow!
If you reveal your genitalia, get it out. Here we go. It's the zip going down, the zip going up. Oh, my God. Did he or didn't he? And if you're listening at home, you'll never know. Again.
Well, as no one needs telling, this week saw a contest, the unexpected result of which will shape the whole future of our nation. A challenger came forward and shook from power someone who many people thought was there for good, and suddenly all the assumptions of the 80s have been overturned.
Yes, on Sunday night, Chris Eubank beat Nigel Benn. One immediate thing that needs to be said about Chris Eubank is that his second name is Eubank. Now, I know what most people think when they hear the word Eubank, but in actual fact, it derives from the old Saxon word Eubank, which meant non-electronic carpet sweeper, popular in the 1970s. Something is clearly wrong in the boxing world, because surely these people should have frightening names.
And in the blue corner, weighing in at £290 with 21 fights and 15 knockouts to his credit, a Mike Kenwood chef. And in the red corner, the WBO undisputed cruiserweight champion of the world, Sugar Ray Jaycloth.
I really think we should get back to the political situation.
All right. We spoke to one of the Labour Party's most senior statesmen.
So, what did you think of this week's big news?
Well, obviously there's been a lot of rash talk, but I really think Chris Eubank fought very well against my son, and I'd like to say again that I believe 100% what my wife told me.
I don't know if you picked up on that one. Both their names are Ben, don't worry about it. If anyone did see the Ben Eubank fight, you have to admit that there was someone in that ring that night who was the most sadistic and cruel beast I've ever seen on the television. ITV interviewer Gary Newbon. Nigel Benn was crying, had apparently lost an eye, and was about to retire on the spot when Gary offered him this word of comfort.
Well, Nigel, you've just seen all your dreams go out the window.
Also, after the fight, Chris Eubank was saying, I'm in excruciating pain, I think I've split my tongue open, I need to go to hospital. Gary Newbon's response was,
so Chris, you must be feeling on top of the world. Chris Eubank was also saying, will you marry me, Karen? Karen, will you marry me now? I'm surprised Gary Newbon didn't find it in his heart to say, I think not, I saw her shagging Ambrose Mendy in the dressing room.
In fact, before he was in sport, Newbon's humanitarian eye had taken him around the world in an illustrious career of on-the-spot TV journalism. Here he is in Dallas in 1963.
Well, Jackie, you've just seen your husband's brains go out the window.
What is the difference between a rock band performing a concert upon the grave of Oscar Wilde and Terry Wogan's toupee? One is a gig on a wit.
And now the third and let's hope final chapter in the Merry White House entertains the troops in the Gulf experience. Last week we made the breakthrough that Saddam Hussein's interest in 1970s politicians like Ted Heath and Tony Benn is because he's a big fan of Mike Yarwood. This causes problems when Dennis Healy is granted an audience.
Well, the Labour Party would, of course, prefer a negotiated settlement.
Mike, relax. Say, what a silly Billy. That's what I want you to say, Mike. You've gone completely overboard with the eyebrows.
No. Mr. President, I really am Dennis Healy.
Of course you are. Now go out and send in the next one. Perhaps it might be Eddie Waring.
Meanwhile, the Merry White House Experience team continue to learn the ropes of an army life.
Right, what you have to remember is as soon as they're in sight, attack, show no mercy, beat them, kick them, and leave them in a pool of blood.
I see. Well, that's always been the army's way with new recruits.
Now, fall in for the how to behave when you're on leave in Britain drill. Put on tassel loafers and white socks. Squeeze into tight stonewashed jeans with alarmingly small packet. Go to disco. Ask DJ to play Spandau Ballet. Spend 3 hours getting into a froth about how you're not pulling, but these civvies whose arses you're saving are. Start a fight. Go up to civvy, point to tattoo and say, paras, mate, paras. Say it 7 or 8 times with escalating violence and then nut him. Dismissed.
Meanwhile, MI5 realise there is one way of causing confusion and stalemate amongst the Iraqi high command.
Mr. President, we must discuss defence plans against imminent American invasion.
Hold on a moment, just one more. Our Allah Saddam, I've come to plead for the freedom of the hostages from Great Britain. Up and under, brilliant, it's still funny.
Yes, the answer. Make Mike Yarwood a special agent.
La, 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 la.
By day, a sad old bastard whose talent dried up in 1980. By night, asleep. His regular on-stage fainting attacks may have been brought on by the stress of being a double agent. Then again, they may just have been a way out of avoiding getting booed off halfway through an impression of someone who hasn't been in the shadow cabinet for 15 years. Can he succeed where Dick Emery failed?
Excuse me, madam.
Miss.
Sorry, miss. You've been accused of smuggling fruit. And it looks to me like you've got some things I'd like to get my hands on.
I'm sorry?
Come on, show us what you've got.
I beg your pardon?
It looks like it might be a lovely pear.
Oh, you are awful. But I like you.
Wait a minute. You're a bloody man.
But in all this, what comfort for the exiled Emir of Kuwait. This week he granted an exclusive interview to British TV's top interviewer.
Well, Your Royal Highness, the Emir of Kuwait, you've just seen your country go out the window.
Karen, will you marry me?
Meanwhile, in Baghdad, sanctions begin to bite. In return, Iraq stops all its export trade with the rest of the world. The stock market collapses amid fears of an acute shortage of long, curly slippers. Suggestions that that joke implies a somewhat cliched view of Arab culture are rebutted as the Mary Whitehouse Experience team go down to Baghdad Market to ascertain what truth there was in MI5's assertion that all Arabs are incompetent tricksters surrounded by shoddy goods and wearing fezzes.
I was on some holy territory the other day. Not like that. Just like that. Carpet, curly slippers. Curly slippers, carpet. Hello, Ahmed. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. What about the Imperialist West? I'd like to buy some carpet.
I said, what are you going to buy it with?
Carpet. I said, hello, Ahmed. Hello, Abdul. I was like that.
I said, hang on, you're not an Arab. You're Mike Yarwood.
I said,
I was going to Mecca the other day. I was burning the American flag. And this bloke comes up to me.
You've been listening to The Mary Whitehouse Experience. It was written and performed by David Vanille, Rob Newman, Steve Punch, Hugh Dennis, and the Tracy Brothers. The producer was Armando Iannucci.